Blog Talk Radio.
Services by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children 6 and older and the treatment of adults. She's also an all-time triathlete. So if you're having any problems breaking through any walls in athletics, give her a call at area code 813-689-2466. If you have any problems with life, please, if you don't give Dr. Carroll a call, give a professional a call. Don't take it out on your neighbors, their first responders, or anyone else. Guys, and I want to welcome Zito and Ty and Brady. We have a slight problem this week. Captain John, who was part of our staff, lost his house in Key West. So so he won't be joining us for a couple of weeks. But we want to send our very best out to the first responders that responded both in Texas and in Florida these last couple of weeks. They've done yeoman jobs, and to the volunteers who just came with boats and water, ice, and food, and those who are now feeding the linemen or trying to get the powers back, we salute you. We send out our very best wishes, and we hope you have a safe trip at home. Well, guys, it was a ruckus week, and leading up to the ruckus tonight, and I want to hold off on the GG fight till we get a good doctor on, because I know he's going to have some extenuating circumstances.
You always know.
Ty, what do you think? Adonis Stevens is talking about taking on Badu Jack.
I saw that. Well, I saw that he said Badu Jack had been calling him out, and since Badu was calling him out, he was there and ready, willing, and able. With that said, Badu has been mandated by one of the sanctioning bodies to fight someone else. As far as Adonis Stevens, the one thing we've known about Adonis Stevenson is he's been known to talk. He's been known to call people out. But as of late, he hasn't been really too aggressively getting those people in the ring. A lot of it has to do with the promotional Cold War, in which he is on one side, but the fact remains that Adonis Stevenson is the lineal light heavyweight champion, but due to his inactivity against top competition, he's no longer considered the man at the division. So, you know, until he actually steps in the ring with a top 10 contender, talk is just talk.
Yeah, talk is just talk. If it came to reality, his best chance is to get Badu Jack now. And not saying that, you know, how it would turn out, but his best chance is to get him now before Badu Jack learns anymore. Because as we've seen, he's a very fast learner. And he's really becoming he looked good at light heavyweight. He didn't look big, but it looked like his moves were good. It looked like his timing was good, as usual. And it looked like he took everything from super middleweight and brought it up with him. So, and actually, maybe even a little bit more aggression. That was in the fight against Cleverly. That's one fight, one style, one opponent. With that said, Adonis Stevens, I mean, if it were to happen, it needs to happen now for him, as far as his best shot. Because, I mean, they're both not young guys, but one is improving. One is definitely improving drastically against top-level competition. The other is not fighting top level competition. So,
great.
On that McGregor Mayweather card, in which Badu Jack fought Nathan Cleverly, the fight Zito's referring to, Badu Jack far and away had the best performance on that card, including Tank Johnson, Shakur Stevenson. Badu Jack put on the most complete performance of any boxer on that card. He's a guy who came into the sport late, but he's been a blank canvas, man, and he's just been learning and learning and learning. And, you know, Zito and I talk about this. Every time he steps in a ring, he's a better fighter. And, you know, he showed wrinkles against Cleverly, who was bigger than him, that we hadn't seen before. So, you know, though Badu Jack is 34, you know, athletically he's leaving his athletic prime. But, you know, the mind still works, and the mind still moves fast. And because he's learning this, he hasn't taken tons of physical damage. He's still being able to apply what he learns, and he still has enough athleticism to make it work. So, again, you know, if he doesn't slow down physically soon, he's only going to keep getting better. And, you know, again, Adonis Stevenson, his best chance, like Zito said, would be to take this guy out now. But, again, is that a fight that could be too dangerous for the money? We don't know. So it's just again, we haven't seen Stevenson in with top competition in quite some time.
Great. Z?
Yeah. I agree with Ty. Stevens, I mean, he does talk. He talks, and, I mean, he keeps his name relevant, and he I guess he keeps the title relevant, which is kind of fading away.
Mm-hmm. So, and make no mistake, the dude can fight. Adonis Stevenson can fight. Yeah. He is very dangerous. But, you know, if you apply your craft against lesser skilled opponents, then it starts to stagnate. I think the same thing personally happened to Andre Berto. And you know, eventually when he finally steps in the ring at 40, 41 years of old against, you know, a live, fresh body, skilled, real world-class fighter, is he going to be able to pull out those tools he was always able to pull out as, mm-hmm. as you know, as quickly and as efficiently as he's always been able to do? You know, so there are going to be question marks lingering when he steps up and really fights, you know, a top contender. He was supposed to be fighting Eleider Alvarez. Eleider Alvarez won the shot for the mandatory, so he was supposed to be fighting Eleider Alvarez. I don't know how come that fight hasn't been made, but, you know, at least we see him in against, you know, a top five rated light heavyweight. But, again, mm-hmm. that fight, you know, that when Eleider Alvarez won the elimination, Eleider Alvarez had already been the mandatory. He went through another elimination and won it. Next thing you know, you hear Adonis Stevenson talking about fighting Badu Jack. I thought he was mandated to fight Alvarez. So who he fights, we have no concept who he'll fight. But, you know, and I never say stuff like this, but it looks like Heyman and Stevenson are kind of milking that title and maybe looking for the cash-out fight. I don't know.
Because, you know, and I'm glad you were talking about that, Ty, and explaining that whole mentality, because we have a guy on the phone here who works out at the St. Pete gym. His name is Jordan Spaeth. Jordan is a 2-time U.S. amateur boxing champion, and he's about to begin his professional career in the very near future. And a date eludes us both at this point in time. But, Jordan, I want to welcome you to the program. How are you tonight?
How you doing, Frank, man? It's a blessing to be here.
Good, good. Jordan, of course, a lot of guys don't know you, so we have a very large audience here again tonight. I'm looking at the meter. We're at... I guess because of the storm, we're just under 200,000 listeners. But let's start with when did you start boxing, and when was your first championship?
I started boxing about 4 years ago. Just came in the gym. I was interested. I have a wrestling background, a Muay Thai background, so you know, I just came in there and get my hands right. And you know, it's a lot of champions around, man. It's a beautiful place to be, man. A lot of good energy in there, man. A lot of history. So I stayed. Coach Dan took a liking to me. I had skills, so it just grew from there, man. I got me a U.S. national championship and 8 fights. And I won me a, I went open at 5 and I won me a ringside national. So those are my 2 nationals. And got me a little door, so I decided to go pro.
Great.
Yeah.
You have questions?
Yeah, I do actually, Jordan. Now, Jordan, I heard you say that you had a Muay Thai and a wrestling background. Now, most guys that come into our gym with a Muay Thai and wrestling background, they also want to get their hands right, but a lot of it is because with those backgrounds, they're looking at getting into MMA. What happens is they come into the gym, they fall in love with boxing, they want to take a couple fights. What made you fall in love with boxing? Because obviously you were already in the different phases of combat. What made boxing be the one that stuck with you and made you want to continue and start a career in it?
I love the history of boxing, man. It's just like a rich history. I love the great champions, man. Riddick Bowe, you know, everybody, man. Holyfield, Ali, the greatest, you know. It's just a rich history. I fell in love with it, you know, just throwing hands. I had a knee injury back then. I hurt my I had a slight meniscus tear, so I just fell in love with it, just, you know, throwing hands. So that was it. But, you know, God has his plans, for everybody. So I stuck with it. I was talented, so I stuck with it.
Hey, Jordan, Vito, thank you for coming on. I actually have 2 questions for you. The first one is the wrestling and Muay Thai. Does that give you, can you tell me if it gives you any, should I say, tactical or technical leverage over your opponent, and how would it?
Oh, yeah, definitely it does. And clinches, and I can switch from orthodox to southpaw, and I don't feel any difference. I still throw 1-2-3 from southpaw. I can throw 1-2-3 from orthodox. I feel good, man, switching up, especially in clinches when somebody grabs you. You feel like you have an advantage in that. You can get your shots off.
Jordan, how many fights total have you had?
Amateur, I had 10 fights.
Okay.
10-0 at 8 knockouts.
Nice.
Now, you mentioned fellow level boxing, Ali and Bo. Do you model your style after any one boxer or ninja style?
I would say I'm like Mike Tyson and George Foreman. They had a baby in Holyfield's living room. You know what I mean?
Mike Tyson and George Foreman had a baby in Holyfield's living room.
Yeah. That's me.
Mike Foreman. Mike Foreman / Holyfield. Okay. Okay, baby. That's a dangerous guy.
I say so, man. I'm heavy-handed, man. I got power in both hands. I can fight going forward. I can fight going backwards. I just been blessed, man. And I can't wait to show the world what I got, you know?
Now I understand you're like 6'1", right?
Yes.
You're 6'1". Now, because of 10 amateur fights, obviously you've been fighting guys bigger than you, or taller than you, I should say. How do you overcome the adversity of getting inside on it? Can you tell the listeners how do you do that specifically?
You have to surprisingly, you got to win the war of the jabs. That's what Coach Dan always tells me. And, you know, it's hard to do that with taller people, but I have pretty good feet. I cut the ring off good, and you go to the body. You got to go to the body. You go to the body, and the head will die. So that's what I do. That's what I do.
Without giving any secrets away, do you have a favorite punch?
Oh, man. All of them. Everyone that lands.
That's
my favorite punch. The one that lands.
The one that lands. I love it.
Heck yeah. Man, are y'all excited about this fight going on tonight?
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah.
What do you think about it?
Oh, man. I like my Mexican brother. This one, man. I don't know. It seems like those 400 fights, man, those 400 amateur fights have been wearing on Golovkin, man. And I don't know, man. I want to give it to Canelo. He looks sharper, man. I like the way he moves, man. But everybody wants to give it to Triple G because of his power, you know. But I don't think he's gonna stay there. I don't think he's gonna stay there and get hit that much, man. It's gonna be a war, though. It's gonna be a war. I see it going a split decision, man. Canelo's way.
What
y'all
think? Since we got into that early, let's open that up. Brady, what do you think tonight's fight's going to bring?
I think Triple G is going to win. I mean, he's faster. I think he's a little stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like kind of like they're. I don't know.
The Titans of the industry.
It's going to be a tough fight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it's going to go into a decision.
All right, let's go to our technical expert, Z.
Well, these two guys aren't excessive foot movers. You're not going to see any toe bouncing, really, with these two guys. With that said, and Ty and I were talking about this earlier. You have one guy who is a devastating, basically a devastating style. Devastating style, one way. One-way devastating style. You have another guy who's devastating in his own way, but he who could kind of do multiple things. It's up to Canelo to change Golovkin's style. It's as simple as that. It's up to Canelo to change what Golovkin does. If Golovkin is allowed to do what he normally does, it's going to be a bad fight for Canelo. With that said, Golovkin has the height and reach advantage. And against certain opponents like Lemieux, he can use that. He can use that against Lemieux. His head is stationary. Canelo is the sort of counterpuncher who could stop that from happening, could stop the consistency of the jab from happening. And one thing I've noticed about Golovkin and his jab, as dangerous as it is, he doesn't work off of it. He uses it to set the pace. But he doesn't throw off of the jab like that. He won't throw a 1-2 or a left hook off the jab. He doesn't work off of the jab that much at all. So I just think when it comes to timing, and the really key point is this. Golovkin's the bigger guy, and he's the most dominant guy. But Canelo, on a professional level, has fought better competition. He's fought better competition going to consistent level. So what I will say is this. The one fight he has lost, I think he has learned from that, and that is the style that he must employ tonight. That Floyd Mayweather sort of style. The counterpunch to stop that, you know, to shy up that guy from opening up. And we saw shades of that when Golovkin was fighting Danny Jacobs, that he would chase Danny Jacobs around, set the pace with the jab, but he wouldn't open up. He wouldn't work off of the jab against Danny Jacobs that much. So, I mean, as I say, I have to give it to Canelo on an edge just because of a really young, he's young, experienced guy. For his age, he has fought better competition than Golovkin. Golovkin is not the best boxer, maybe the hardest hitting guy, may even be the most durable guy, but he's not the best boxer that Canelo has seen. I can't. Canelo's going to be the best boxer that Golovkin has seen.
Ty?
Well, Triple G doesn't get enough credit for his defense. He actually blocks and parries punches pretty well. With that said, what he does not have, though, is a lot of wrinkles to his defense. His defense is pretty much a high guard, and again, he blocks and parries punches pretty well. Against Canelo, who is, he's a counterpuncher, right? But he's a two-fisted, explosive combination counterpuncher. Canelo's hands are significantly quicker than Triple G's. He can let three go easier and quicker and more fluidly than Gennady Golovkin can. With that said, Gennady Golovkin has a height reach advantage. He's definitely an elite level boxer. His boxing skills cannot be taken for granted. Canelo's upper body movement is obviously going to be key in this. What Golovkin likes to do, specifically against boxers, he likes to cut the ring off, apply pressure, make them fight at a higher pace than they want to. That's what he did with Kell Brook. He had Kell Brook fighting at a much higher pace than Brook wanted to, and it wears your body out, you know, trying to keep this guy off you. Well, here's the thing, though. With Canelo, Canelo stands his ground. He makes you miss with his upper body movement, and that way he's dug into the canvas to be able to come back with explosive hard punches. So he's stepping into shots that a lot of boxers, when they fight Golovkin, don't get to step into. I think that was part of why Danny Jacobs didn't win the fight against Golovkin, because he waited a little too late to really start stepping into his shots. He was more punching on the fly. It was the threat of his power that kept Golovkin at bay and just fighting behind his jab, as Zito said, but not really working off of his jab, because in my opinion, he was a little reluctant to let his punches go because he was afraid of what was incoming. That's the key. Canelo has to get his respect. He has to make Golovkin fear the incoming and make Golovkin hesitant to let his hands go in combination, specifically with Canelo being able to come back quicker and, you know, with combination counters. The key for Triple G, I believe, is going to be his jab. If he's able to find his beat on the jab and kind of dictate the pace and move Canelo back, it could be a difficult fight for Canelo. If Canelo can't hurt him, it could be a difficult fight for Canelo. The funny thing about this matchup is, even though we've seen a lot of both fighters, right, we know so much about both fighters, but there are a lot of questions going into this matchup. One, Zito said this is the best fighter Golovkin's ever faced, and that's true. We know Golovkin's a very good fighter. We don't know if he's a great fighter. So can he beat Canelo? We don't know. This is the best fighter he's faced. At the same time, the only person Canelo's fought above the 155 limit has been Julio Cesar Chavez, who was zombie-like at the time. So this will definitely, we don't know what Canelo brings to the table at middleweight. And at the same time, we know Canelo's a very, very good fighter. Is he a great fighter? We don't know. A lot of the greatness that we may think could have been done with promotional smoke and mirrors. So how good is Canelo specifically at middleweight, right? So there's a lot of unanswered questions. With that said, I really do think this is a 50-50 fight. I'd lean slightly towards Triple G because he's the more proven commodity at middleweight. And with a Triple G victory, I wouldn't be surprised if it were a stoppage or if he were to eke out a points decision. With that said, though, I would not the least bit be surprised if Canelo were to go ahead and kind of out-hustle him to a decision either. So,
well, Gordon, let me get back to you and explain. Now, Dan and I have had many talks about your abilities and things like that. Of all the boxers that you've seen, all the boxers that you've mentioned, and your two parents, who do you model your fight style after?
I like Tyson. I like Holyfield, man. I like having consistent pressure, keep the jab popping, go to the body, go to the head. My defense is consistently getting better. My head movement is getting there, and you know I'm just working, man. I like Tyson and Holyfield, man. I like Tyson and Holyfield.
Are there any boxers today that you like to watch, regardless of weight?
What'd you say?
Are there any boxers today, regardless of weight, that you like to watch? And you know, obviously, being a great student of the game, it makes sense and it behooves you to take a little bit from everybody. Is there anybody today, regardless of weight, that you're like, you know what, if I could do a little bit of that, man?
Oh, man. Loma Chico is ridiculous. I don't see myself doing anything like that, but God damn, that guy is ridiculous. My goodness.
Yeah.
He's a magician, man.
Doing anything like that.
Oh my God! But I like a lot of people, man. I like my boy Keith, man. That's my brother, man. I like his style. I like a lot of people, man. It's ridiculous. Kell Brook, he's fast. I like how he moves. I like Gennady, man. I like how he switches up. I like how he cuts off the ring. I like a lot of people, bro. I like a lot of people, and I just try to take a little bit from everybody. I try to not be closed-minded, man. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Right,
you know.
Right.
So it's just by being a student, man.
We know you have one of the sharpest minds in your gym, and he'll be. We're well aware he'll be in your corner during any of the fights, but and you know Dan is a good friend and a great resource for us many times. Tell us what it's like working with Dan. I mean, he's been there, he's done it, and he's back teaching now.
That's exactly it, man. He's a great teacher of the game, man. A lot of coaches, man, are like. Just different coaches out there, like yelling at you. You know what I mean? Like getting in your face and shit. It doesn't work. That doesn't work well with me, man. Coach Dan's very calm, man. Level headed. His experience is out of this world, man. He's just a teacher of the game, man, and just calm, very calm in the storm, like. You see a lot of coaches, man, you get rattled, man. Like in war times, man, just get rattled, and it'll make you nervous. But he's not like that at all. He's calm, very calm, and that's what I like and I appreciate. You need that in your corner, you know.
Certainly. And when do you think you're? I know what you had originally said October 3rd. Do you have any idea when you'll be going up again?
I'm talking to a lot of people right now. It's probably gonna be at the end of October. October 3rd fell through. They weren't doing it, so. At the end of October, definitely.
Okay. And it's gonna be in Tampa.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so sometime before the fight, we'll have you back on, and you can give us all the particulars, and we'll see if we can't get people out there to see. And again, I really want to point out that along with being the calming force in the ring, Dan has, I want to say, raised many men from that gym that are outstanding citizens, not only in the Tampa St. Pete area, but across the country. They put their all out there. They're good people, good living people, and you don't see them. You know, there's a lot of times you see a boxer has offended somebody or done something here or there. You don't see that coming out at the St. Pete Gym, and that's something that anybody that belongs to the St. Pete Gym should be proud of. And we're proud to have Dan as a co-contributor and a great friend.
That's
Jordan,
nice.
I
don't
want to keep you tonight. I appreciate your time. Any final words you want to give us?
Look forward to me, man. Young Headache, man. I'm taking over the world.
There you go.
Young Headache.
I've heard that every time I walk in the gym. I get the finger comes pointing to you. Here's my world champion. Yep. So, okay.
I appreciate it, man. You
take
guys have a nice evening.
Thank you.
No problem. All
right.
Peace.
Hey, Ty, what do you think of this World Boxing Super series that they want to put on? That was supposed to start the 9th of September.
Yeah, it did. It started last week. In fact, you know, I watched the first fight, which was Marco Huck against Usyk. Usyk won, stopped Marco Huck.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a fantastic thing. The cruiserweight division is one of the deepest, most competitive divisions in the sport today, along with the flyweight division, in which we need to talk about. There was a big event with Chocolatito getting knocked out last week, so that happened last week as well in the flyweight division. But the flyweight division and the cruiserweight division are, like, literally the two deepest divisions in sports today. A lot of the casual fans don't pay attention because the flyweight division is 115 guys, and the cruiserweight division is mostly happening in Europe. But the fact of the matter is this Super Series tournament looks fantastic. We got a really good fight last week, and we got a matchup that we probably would not have gotten had the tournament not been put on. So I'm all for it. I'm all for the super middleweight version, which isn't necessarily filled with the quality that the cruiserweight version is, but super middleweight doesn't have the depth that cruiserweight does. But still, we got some good fights coming out of this because of these tournaments. So I'm very excited about it. And as it goes forward, we have some even better matchups than the one we saw last week. The one we saw last week was the number one seed against the final seed. So, again, the matchups will even be more compelling. But we got some really tough fights ahead of us with these guys.
Mm-hmm. Ty, Z?
Absolutely. People don't know a lot about the cruiserweight division. I mean, you have a lot of names that's outside of, I should say, current media boxing. But one thing is, I mean, the cruiserweight division is always looked at as the precursor to the heavyweight, generally because cruiserweights get a little older, they move up. These guys aren't exactly there with it, to be honest. This is going to... It should liven the cruiserweight division up more than that.
Mm-hmm. The other question I had was October 28th, we have Dillon White is going to take on Derek Chisora as an undercard to the Joshua fight. What's your thoughts on that, Ty?
Well, the first fight was a hell of a fight. And I see why they would, they would want to make a two from a financial standpoint. Chisora might not be too happy about it, not because he's afraid of, not Chisora, Dillian Whyte may not be too happy, not because he's afraid of Chisora, but the fact of the matter is that fight, like many other fights we see, was supposed to be an eliminator, supposed to put him in the mandatory position for Deontay Wilder, I believe it was. That fight is not coming to be. Deontay Wilder has been finalized to fight Luis Ortiz, the fight we're all looking forward to. So maybe with no place to go, Dillian Whyte says, you know what, I could get the most money fighting Chisora again. If you haven't seen the first fight, everybody, go to YouTube, watch it. It's probably one of, you know what, it was probably the best, most action-packed heavyweight fight I had seen in quite some time. It was probably a better fight than Klitschko-Joshua. It just won't stand out that way because of the magnitude behind Klitschko-Joshua. But it was a really tremendous heavyweight fight. So, I'm definitely all for it, too. All for part two.
Mm-hmm. Is he, I was going to ask you. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
no, it's okay. Go.
I'm all for part two, except for this. If the precursor to part one takes place again, then I'm all for part two. All of that physicality and negativity.
Oh,
you
guys got the
Russell
in the Sky Sports studio? Yeah, I forgot all about that.
If that happens again, then I'm all for part two. And the reason why is this. If it doesn't happen and it's calm and neutral, Chisora's going to come in not motivated. And we've seen Chisora come in not motivated for fights, and we've gotten his losing results. With Chisora motivated, then we have what we had in part one. It's as simple as that.
Well, how about now another fight that is on the rise is Yuri Fury. He's talking about he talks about his cousin in this last article, and he wants to. He thinks he's going to KO Joseph Parker in four rounds. I don't see that happening.
No, that won't happen. I'm not saying Yuri Fury can't win, but if he wins, it's not going to happen that way. Yuri Fury is not a good puncher. What he is he's a big. He's like Tyson Fury. He's he's a big awkward guy who's more agile than he looks, more nimble than he looks, and he fights behind his height, and he's pretty busy. He pumps a busy jab. Yuri Fury is not going to just walk in and blow the doors off of anyone, especially. This would be the best fighter that Yuri Fury has faced. This isn't the best fighter that Joseph Parker has faced. Not proven to be yet. Yuri Fury could turn out to be something special, but again, he was always looked at as the little cousin of Tyson Fury, the one who's not quite as good and not as loud. But this is his chance to make a name for himself, and his best chance would be against Joseph Parker. But at this point, I don't necessarily favor him in that fight. Do I think his style could trouble Parker at some points throughout the fight?
It could turn out to be a sloppy fight. I'm more or less kind of saying just because Fury, just that this awkwardness, if Parker's he's going to be trying to get at Fury. It's as simple as that. It could turn into a sloppy fight where Fury kind of falling in and just kind of knocking him off. I see Parker being cleaner a bit. It just kind of going that way. But another fight I kind of want to talk about that's been made is Lomachenko and Rigondeaux. Yeah,
that's the next one I have on my list.
Oh, I'm sorry. So
Go.
But it's a more interesting fight than everyone in boxing and outside of boxing thinks, to me. It's a lot more interesting.
So, actually, it's funny because in hardcore circles, that fight gets a lot of buzz and, people consider it a historic fight because, well, first of all, it's the first time you've ever had two guys fight who both have two Olympic gold medals. So, you know, hardcore fans are like salivating over this matchup. Yeah, I'm very excited about this matchup. First of all, I'm glad Rigondeaux finally gets a big fight again after really being blackballed, in my opinion, for beating Nonito Donaire, for undressing Nonito Donaire, which is what he did. I think this fight, to me, comes down to really two things, and that's 6 years and 9 pounds, 6 years and 8 pounds, which is, you know, the big difference to me and why I think this is a, you know, a tremendous uphill climb for Rigondeaux. He's skilled enough to do it, but against a guy like this, you know, who's really, in a sense, just as skilled in a different way. You know, 6 years, he's given up 6 years and 8 pounds, and I think 8 pounds will equate to more on that night, unless there's a rehydration clause. Rigondeaux is a small 122er.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's going up, and he's going all the way up to 130, where Lomachenko is completely, fully grown in and filled in at 130. So he's given up, and he's 35. And let's just be honest, 122-pound guys at 35, the smaller guys, their career longevity is shorter than the older guys. We just saw Chocolatito basically reach the end of his career last week at the age of 30. The younger guys the smaller guys, they don't have the longevity. A heavyweight could fight till Tony Thompson's age and still be effective. That doesn't happen with the smaller guys, right? So Rigondeaux is 122-35. His style relies on tremendous timing reflexes, and he's given up 8 pounds to a guy who's in his prime with the same type of amateur pedigree. So you'd have to make Lomachenko the favorite. Rigondeaux, I still believe, hits harder. But I don't favor him in that fight. And not that I think he's any less skilled, but I think he's going in giving up a little too many advantages, personally. This fight, he had a better chance, in my opinion, when Lomachenko was at 126 and Rigondeaux was at 122 and they were talking about meeting at 124. I thought we could have had a much better fight then. I still give him a chance because of how skilled he is. But again, 6 years, 8 pounds, a lot to give up.
I think one of the major things that Rigondeaux is giving up has to do with his style, and that is if the fight is close, he doesn't win a decision. He does not have to judge it. For promotional reasons, if anything. But Lomachenko works. Rigondeaux doesn't. Now, is Rigondeaux's job to make the bigger, younger man stop his work? That's his job. It's simple as this. If he does it, Lomachenko wins. I mean, he wins clearly. He wins with controversy, however it goes. One thing I'm going to say is this, though. I cannot count Rigondeaux out at all. Not against Lomachenko, at least.
Not against anybody with two gloves on.
No. And there's one major reason why, specifically against Lomachenko. Rigondeaux is older, but he has more pro experience.
Mm-hmm.
He has more pro experience. And he's a smaller man, but he's more physicality. More physical, able to deal with it, I think, at this level. Lomachenko's still amateurish. He's very, very gifted in the sense of boxing, absolutely. But he's still amateurish. Rigondeaux is not. He with his work he does is meant for something. It's always meant for something. To where Lomachenko, he does a lot of work and it does a lot of good. But in the pro ranks, you always want to do more with less. Get more done by doing less, I should say. And that comes with experience, especially in the pro level. The contact is different. So I can see Rigondeaux shying Lomachenko up off of that. That's why I think it makes the fight kind of a little more interesting to me.
Yeah, I completely agree with Zito. I think Lomachenko definitely, you could see him moving a lot but not throwing a lot of punches because of fear of opening up of what's coming back, because what comes back comes very fast, very hard. It comes straight. It comes looping. It comes to the head or to the body. With that said, I think the difference will be 6 years, 8 pounds, And, you know, Rigan Diaz, tremendously skilled and gifted. What he's never been is the best catcher. Like, he doesn't take necessarily the best shot. And at this stage in the game, I think Rigan Diaz is big enough, young enough, quick enough, and skilled enough to maybe clip him. And that's what I see right now. I wouldn't be surprised if again, I would never count Rigan Diaz out. But right now, I would lean towards Lomachenko clipping him. And, you know, and eventually, you know, stopping it within the distance. That's kind of how I see it. Could be wrong. And I, you know, not looking at footage. But regardless, it's a fight to look forward to because of the skill level. You're not going to see a better fight from a skill standpoint. And that's no disrespect to what you're going to see tonight. You're going to see two tremendously skilled guys standing in the middle of the ring fighting a war. But part of that is because as skilled as these guys are now, there's still not a lot of wrinkles to their overall game. Like, Canelo has really developed his overall game, but he'll never be a mover. You know what I mean? Just, you know. So, like, you're not going to get maybe the slugfest you'll get tonight because neither guy has that offensive tool set or mentality that these two guys have tonight. But from a skill standpoint, you can't find two better skilled fighters than Rigan Diaz and Lomachenko. And it really is going to be an honor to be able to watch those two guys fly their trade against each other.
That's a matchup of pure boxing science.
Yeah, like if you want to learn how to box, that's the fight you want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, study both guys in wins or losses, whether one guy gets blown out or not. Know that you're probably watching the two maybe most skilled guys, you know, to come across the pike in the last 20 or 30 years. Easily.
They're,
you know,
they're,
just from skills,
They're not big mistake makers.
No. In the hardcore fans, they have their favorites, but they know this. Like, once this fight was made, you go to the message boards and, you know, all those guys are blown away excited about that. Hey, again, it's been called boxing. This year has been called the year that keeps giving as far as boxing because of the tremendous fights, the matchups. Like, this is the year boxing finally kind of got it right. Even
hey, guys,
the Mayweather...
we're joined here in the last part of the show with our Far West correspondent. You want to come on there, Far West correspondent?
Yeah, hey, guys, how are you? Who's on tonight?
We're doing good.
Thank you.
Who's on
how's
tonight?
Going,
it's just Zito, Ty, and myself and Brady right now. We had Jordan Spieth, who is the national amateur champion, who's about to go pro.
Well, I'm glad Zito and Ty are on because I just have a couple minutes. I'm taking my wife out for her birthday dinner.
Oh, awesome. Happy birthday to her.
Thanks.
What I was going to bring up is, you know, obviously there's a phenomenal fight tonight. And arguably, you can say Alvarez beats Mayweather. I think he did. But
Canelo Alvarez, are you serious?
Alvarez?
Yeah, you thought he beat Mayweather?
Yeah. I was waiting for somebody to say something.
Yeah, I don't like Mayweather, but that fight wasn't close, except for the one judge who surprisingly is judging tonight. But we'll talk about that too, I guess.
Yeah. No, I was waiting for somebody to say something. You know, Triple G had trouble with Kell Brooks. I think he has trouble with speed. But, you know, I think this fight could go either way. But I was reading a very interesting stat, and I may be wrong, but apparently CompuBox, the stat I read was that he lands about 60 punches a round. Or a little more. So, you know, if you're fighting him for 12 rounds, you know, that's 720 punches you're facing. Okay? And let's say conservatively, 20% of those are power shots. I don't know how Alvarez can beat him unless he goes deep into the rounds and with speed because – you know, Triple G had trouble with Kell Brooks because of his speed. And it's going to be a good fight. but I'm giving the edge to Alvarez tonight, and I'm not sure why.
You know, I'm going to tell you something.
Whether Triple G lands 60 punches around or not, here's what I know. He didn't land, let alone, I don't even know if he threw 60 punches around against Danny Jacobs. And part of that was because of the threat of what was coming back at him. And, you know, again, Canelo, because he's not just a counterpuncher, you know, a quick time, you know, prime reflexive counterpuncher, but he's a two-fisted combination counterpuncher with really quick hands. That could show Triple G up. If that does, if Triple G is not throwing punches, like Zito said, if he's not doing what he normally does, he has a tremendous jab, but he's not going to be able to beat Canelo Alvarez with his jab alone. If he is not able to put hurt on Canelo, then no, he doesn't beat Canelo. With that said, if Canelo is not able to get his respect and make him not throw those 60 punches around, what people don't know about Triple G is he has one of the highest punch-landed differentials. Right? He lands at a significantly higher rate than what he gives up. I think part of that is because he shells his opponents up. He can throw more punches because people are afraid to let their punches go because of his power. If Canelo is able to shell him up a little bit or just make him think, like Zito and I say, make him think and look to set his jab to kind of keep Canelo at bay, then Canelo can win the fight. The threat of Triple G's power is real. We know that. But like you said, he got touched up his last two fights. I personally think he got touched up his last two fights because he fought the best two guys he's ever fought. I also think he's going to get touched up tonight. It's just a matter of whether Canelo can touch him up at a pace that keeps Triple G honest. If he can't keep Triple G honest, all bets are off. Simple as that.
And one thing is, it's the subtlety. And this fight is we have the looming thing, the power, the speed, the weight. But it's the subtleties, really. And Ty, you mentioned earlier, Golovkin, his defense is better than people, you know, give it credit for. He subtly parries shots. He's not a big head mover, not a big waist spinner, but he subtly parries shots. Well, Canelo is one of the best who subtly fakes, little subtle fakes. And when you're dealing with somebody who parries shots, the one thing you do want to do is faint. You faint, and that draws that parry out, so the hand moves out of position. Once you're able to control where the fighter is going to move their hand, then you're able to control where and how it's going to hit them. That, I think, is that little subtlety plays a big part in this fight to me.
I think we're going to see a hell of a fight.
It's going to be. Yeah, it's going to be work need to be done by both guys. It's not going to be any easy roads.
No.
Well,
no, and I don't think this
fight, because stylistically, these are two guys who are at their best when they're kind of right in front of you. Neither guy is a mover. If you see Canelo having to move about the ring, it's not a good thing. That's not a good thing because he's not fighting his fight. So that's what makes it too interesting because you have two guys whose style is to really stake the center of the ring.
If you see Golovkin posing in the center of the ring, not going forward, things aren't going well for Golovkin.
Good point.
You know,
he's a momentum guy. I'm sorry, Frankie.
I heard that they were trying to make an undercard of Sister Sandra and Donald Poon, but they just could not get the contract.
No, but they made sure they got Diego De La Hoya on the undercard. I'll tell you that. I knew Diego De La Hoya would be on the undercard. We'd be fed him again.
Yeah.
Abbott, while you threw her on there, let me ask you a question about Deontay Wilder, Luis Ortiz, coming up November 4th. Ty, what's your thoughts?
You know, Luis Ortiz does have one tremendous problem, and is that he doesn't have as developed a right hand as you'd like to see in a pro. He's a southpaw. He's a kind of a one-armed bandit. He has more of a right hand than a Adonis Stevenson per se, but he's kind of that Cuban style in a sense where he doesn't have that tremendous lead hand outside of his jab. The other thing too is that the one issue I've had with Luis Ortiz is he's a bit of a plotter. Doesn't cut off the ring. Deontay Wilder will move and will fight behind his range. That is a very interesting fight. Deontay has proven against you know, albeit a certain level of opposition, that he can fight a disciplined fight for 12 rounds. Luis Ortiz presents more size than a Stiverne. He presents a more skill set than a Stiverne. He's very capable of catching Deontay Wilder. With that said, he hasn't shown me a tremendous ability at being able to close the distance and really whack a taller guy. When he fought Tony Thompson, after he had fought Brian Jennings, and everybody was like, oh, he's the next heavyweight champion, I remember saying on the show, you know, let's see what he does against Tony, because I got to see how he fights against height. He had a hard time tracking Tony down. He couldn't track Malik Scott down, even though he clearly won that fight. With the threat of Deontay Wilder's power, it's going to be a very interesting fight, because I think he's going to have a hard time tracking Deontay down, at least early, and he has to worry about what's coming at him. So I think he has a good chin now. The guy looks like he could take a back shot to the face. So, I don't want to get into a prediction yet, because we still got a ways to go, but it's a very interesting fight, I think.
Yeah, guys, I gotta get off here, but I wanted to say, I'm gonna echo what Ty is saying. You know, Ortiz just doesn't cut off the ring, and you can't do that with someone as dangerous as Wilder, you know, because he's going to take his shots, and if you're not able to, you know, put him in a phone booth more or less, he's going to hurt you bad, I think that it's a little early. But, you know, if the fight was tonight, I would say Wilder going away. But, well, guys, I got to get going. Thanks a lot for, keeping the show alive, and I'll be on next Saturday with you.
Hey, great. Thanks, Frank. Enjoy the fight tonight, too, and have a good fun birthday fun.
Happy birthday,
thanks.
McKenna.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Okay, we got article here I want to talk about was Earl Spence has his first title defense coming up likely in December in New York. What's your thoughts on that, Ty?
Well, right now I don't have much thoughts, because as of right now he's still, set to face that dreaded opponent TBA. So until TBA actually becomes somebody, there's not much to say. You know, he's a good fighter, and just curious as to who he's going to fight.
Yeah.
This is probably going to be a mandatory. And he'll look to take a volunteer. He really wants Keith in 2018. Obviously, Keith's out to 2018. Terrence Crawford's talking about moving up to 147. He called out Keith because right now Keith is considered the man at 147, so he's the guy that everybody wants. But as far as his next title defense with Spence, it's still not even determined who he's fighting yet. And I assume it's just going to be a mandatory. It's not going to be a major fight of that ilk yet.
Zeke?
Earl Spence, I agree with Ty as far as we have to see who his opponent's going to be. And I don't imagine it's going to be the hardest touch yet. He just came off the Kell Brook fight. They're going to, get him a little more, promotion before he steps up. Probably see Katie Keith. I just wanted to get my take on real quick on Deontay Wilder Lewis Ortiz fight.
Oh, yeah, go.
This fight is all about who opens up. Who opens up? Because I could see this fight going a lot like the Malik Scott fight, with Deontay Wilder more defense than looking to just try to catch him with one shot, losing that way. Or, really, to be honest, Deontay has to stop him. Ortiz from coming forward. Because if Ortiz is coming forward, Ortiz, 9 times out of 10, is throwing something, hard. He doesn't have a right. That's correct. He does chase his opponents around the ring. But one thing he'll do, he'll chase them around the ring, and they won't throw, because once they start opening up, that's when he tends to catch them. For Deontay to hit him with something, Deontay is going to have to open up. Luis Ortiz is more seasoned than Deontay. He is a better boxer, period. Deontay is more physically gifted. He's younger. But Luis Ortiz, he doesn't hit as hard as Deontay. Nobody does at heavyweight right now. But he's a very hard knockout puncher to me, too. He's also one of those guys. To be honest, if the fight were tonight, to me, I see Luis Ortiz chasing Deontay around and Deontay not opening up. That's exactly the fight I see. A lot like Malik Scott. Deontay has a habit of pulling that squared up straight. Luis Ortiz will eat that up in the beginning. And if he doesn't knock Deontay out, Deontay is going to have to be on the run, not really thinking about planting his feet for the shot. I mean, just technique alone, the one-handed guy can beat the no-technique guy in it.
Do we lose somebody?
Huh? Yeah. I'm...
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure you're still there.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we're at the end of our hour here. I appreciate all the time you give us every week. You're always prepared. You're always ready to go at it. There is a question that some names have come up. I don't know if either of you would remember them. Todd Morgan, Eddie Morgan, they supposedly fought out of Pottstown. Al Conway, Al Grandal, Charlie Pinto, Chet Miller, Andre Kucech, Cooch. He was known as K.O. Cooch, Henry Taggart, and Buddy Zoll. I didn't know any of those names, but a friend of mine asked if anybody knew anything about him. I thought if Chris is on, we'll ask him, but I'll give him a call and ask him.
Yeah, the name Al Conway sounded real familiar. But
that's what I thought. I thought he
yeah,
had done
that. That name, when you said Al Conway, I was like, wait a minute, that one stuck out, really.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Just so everybody will know, Notre Dame is well ahead of Boston College. If you know the Boston College motto, since they're both run by the Christian Brothers, it's God, country, almost Notre Dame. But,
Damn. Damn.
Almost Notre Dame.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody, a first responder or anybody in uniform, please, they've been through an awful lot in the last month. Please let them know you know they're there. A handshake, a wink, or just a smile means a lot to the guys on the street today. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. W. Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Landy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Zerba, Arnolfo Crispin, Patrolman Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office. Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office. Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department. Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol. Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department. Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department. Patrol Sergeant Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department. Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, Harris County Deputy Sheriff Darrell Goforth. Prince William County Deputy Sheriff Ashley Gidden, Eustis, Texas Patrol Officer David Heffer, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Sergeant Paul Tosalto, New York Police Department, Special Inspector FDLE Vinnie Galaccia, Corporal Stephen Ballard, Delaware State Police, Kissimmee Police Department's Patrol Officer Matthew Baxter, and Sergeant Sam Howard. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun and light shinely on your face. And may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great week.
Shem Alekma Yilama Shem Alekma
Love you. I miss you.